Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Dave.
And we're the hosts of the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, where we bring you stories that delve into the science and spirit behind intriguing people doing extraordinary things.
Welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast. This week, it's episode 43. This week, we are talking to an accomplished and elite ultra runner, Ricky Gates. Now, if you don't know who Ricky is, you've been hiding under a rock for the last couple decades. Ricky has won almost everything that he's put his mind to. Early in his career, he was out destroying records and winning all the races. And lately, Ricky is up to a lot of fun and journey. Ricky ended up running every single street, I believe, in San Francisco, Santa Fe, and Mexico City. I want to talk to him more about that. But just a couple months ago, I ended up sitting down and watching this movie called Transamericana. And if you haven't seen it, you got to watch it. And so it's about Ricky's journey running across America on some kind of, you know, not well run paths, meeting people, his fellow Americans, and getting to know his neighbors and really ultimately himself. And so, yeah, it's my special privilege to welcome Ricky Gates to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast. Welcome, Ricky.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me along. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. So, Ricky, one of the things we love to do is that often when we meet people who are doing extraordinary things, the listener is sort of like, oh, well, I could never do that. So the backstory is always really important because we all sort of start from the same place, pretty humble, usually, you know, not with expectations of what might happen years from that moment. So maybe tell a little bit about sort of, you know, we know you went to school in Colorado, but even before that, you know, what was it about Ricky as a kid? You know, were you a runner? Were you an explorer, an adventurer, just intuitively? You know, did you have big influences in your life? Let's just hear a little bit of that background.
Totally. So, I grew up in a place that would be not considered humble. I grew up in Aspen, Colorado, most well known for skiing and used to be millionaires, but now it's billionaires and more private jets on the airport runway than you could possibly imagine for a teeny little airport. Despite that, I grew up for at least for that valley's standards. I grew up on the poorer side. And as a result of that, I was forced to take advantage of a lot of the community offered events and privileges that you have there. So early on, I joined what was called the Aspen Alpine Club. It was a youth organization to get the kids of the valley out into the mountains around the Aspen area, the Elk Mountains and just beyond. And I would say that was really what first got me super interested in being out on the trails and into the mountains. I went to middle school down valley from Aspen and then to high school at Aspen High School. My freshman year in Aspen, I finally came to terms with being a pretty terrible soccer player. And my friend was on the cross country team and he said, quit the soccer team and join the cross country team. It's fun. It's co-ed. We get out on the trails. And so that's kind of how I started my running career was over 25 years ago. The coach made a point of getting us out on the trails at least two or three times a week. It's the reason that he moved to that area. So yeah, that's kind of the me being a mountain or trail runner. I wasn't immediately good at it. I did not make it to state my freshman year. My sophomore year, I made it by the skin of my teeth, and I think I finished 150th. And then by my junior year, I was starting to improve, and then senior year, I think I ended up third or fourth at state. And that's for the small league schools of Colorado, which is to say that I was okay at the sport. I didn't have any immense natural talent that propelled me into the spotlight right away. It's just something that I've really loved and pursued now going on 2.5 decades.
Yeah. So Ricky, so tell me a little bit more about that. I mean, when you first started running, coming, you know, from soccer, and you know, were running a lot more trail, and it sounds like you're running track, which, you know, to be honest with you, is not all that inspiring, right? Running beautiful trails and summits and river valleys. It's beautiful. You know, what were some of the things that really contributed to your joy and your love and your purpose? Just for being out there and running? Because when I end up hearing more about your story, I keep hearing purpose. Like you're purpose driven when it comes to finding yourself. What were you doing back in your late teens and early 20s, really to kind of find your purpose back then with running?
I mean, I don't know if it was really so much as of finding a purpose with running during those years, so much as it was that I just really enjoyed the people that were on the team. Sorry, I've got a, hey, come here. I've got a puppy that is a little and being my home. It was mostly about the team back then. I just really enjoyed spending time with all of these people, close friends of mine, one of whom is still my best friend to this day, 25 years later. You know, there's just something about the sport that draws like-minded people together and creates these really important bonds of friendship. So that's really what it was about. In those years of my life.
Yeah, which is interesting because, you know, as you know, of course, I don't know if any of us set out to sort of have fame or attention brought to us, but we find a path. And it seems like one of the themes, though, you know, I guess you majored in sociology and photography in college, which is an interesting combination. I like that sort of some study of people in two different lenses, right? And then, you know, as you moved along, and of course your escapades most recently, it's very clear it's about the people. I mean, at least that's to me, it feels like, okay, so you started that, you continue that, you're creating this community. As you think about sort of how that grows in one's life and how you then turn sort of an interest in people to then wanting to get out running and then bringing a message. Does that sort of evolve? Was that natural for you? How did that sort of come about?
Yeah, so I mean, what went from high school and then on into college, I did run for 1 year at Lewis and Clark in Portland, Oregon, 1 year of college. You guys have to forgive me. I'm going to let the dog outside because she's going to...
No, not at all. Yeah, yeah.
Just pause it for a second.
There.
So, going from high school on into college, it was still really important for me, the team aspect of it. I ran for 1 year at Lewis and Clark College in Portland, Oregon. That was my freshman year. Decided I wasn't ready for school yet, took a couple years off from school, traveled to South America, to Italy, worked at home in Aspen in the restaurants and also backcountry skiing, and then re-enrolled at the University of Colorado in Boulder, kind of, again, looking for that community in running. I tried to make the cross-country team there for 3 consecutive years, and for 3 consecutive years, I came up short on making the walk-on team. So that kind of was a point in my life of transition from, you know, using this sport as a social thing, as a way to meet people, to a more internal version of the sport. And so for the next several years, it was pretty much, it was pretty much about me in terms of my own running career. It was about my personal training and about my personal goals and achievements. That's when I started training for and getting on to the U.S. mountain running team and traveling to Europe and competing in races all around Europe, and then got signed on to the Salomon team, and ended up having this wonderful opportunity to travel all over the world with this sport. But towards the end of that, what I would call like 6 or 7 or 8 years of racing and competing primarily for myself, is kind of when I realized that without really intending on it, I found another community of runners in this trail and ultra running world, and that it had provided me this opportunity to see places around the world and meet people around the world. So it was, and that's kind of when I realized that I wanted to continue learning about people through this lens of running, and shifted my main goals in the sport from competing and doing well in races to trying to tell stories and meet people from all over the world, and also my own country, and then subsequently from my own towns and neighborhoods and city streets.
Right. So yeah, so like Ricky, let's talk about that, because I'm super curious, an elite ultra runner kind of transitioning into, more self-discovery, discovering people, discovering community, different cultures all over the world, even different cultures within your country. Let's go into Transamericana for a second, and a lot of the lessons that you end up learning with that, the Transamerica run. Maybe talk to our audience a little bit about that, some of the learnings. I think that a lot of our listeners have already seen the movie, but let's pretend for a second that they haven't. What would they expect when they were to click on the film and watch it?
Yeah, so running across the country, I should say kind of going across the country by my use of transportation, my own energy, was a dream that I had all the way back in high school. I'd read a book by this guy, Peter Jenkins, called A Walk Across America, that it was written in the 1970s, kind of a similar sort of time, I would say, as the mid to late teens in the 2015 to 2020, when the country kind of feels like it's quite divided and split. And 2016 was kind of a time in my life when I realized, like, if I'm going to make this happen, sure, I could do it later on in my life. But right now is going to be the most important time for me. And so I decided to finally make this dream happen, and started organizing a route across the country that would be kind of, if I was to only do it one time, this felt like the most appropriate route for me personally. And that's to say, like, I've never really spent any time in the South. So I wanted to start there. I wanted to finish in a town that I'd called home for a bunch of years, San Francisco. I'd been living there off and on for 5 or 6 years at that point. I wanted to pass through my hometown of Aspen, Colorado, and see some friends and get a home-cooked meal. I wanted my journey to be informed by American history. So I paid close attention to some of our historical trails that go across the country, some of which are like the Trail of Tears. This is a trail that goes from kind of the Southern Appalachians out to Oklahoma. It was a forced migration of the Cherokee Indians to kind of the first of many Indian reservations. I looked at the Pony Express Trail, which only existed for a year and a half, but kind of lives on in American lore as this interesting expansion into the Western territories. I looked at the Santa Fe Trail, which is again kind of a trade route from America to what was then Spain. And ironically, where I'm living now is in Santa Fe, New Mexico. This was the end of that trail or the beginning of that trail, depending on which way you're going. So those are the historical elements that I took into account. And then also, I think so much of what America is about is the nature that we have here. And how diverse it is from east to west. And so I that long distance trails that we have in this country. And just in my research alone, I was able to find so many trails that I didn't even know existed before. So I took on the Palmetto Trail in South Carolina that goes clear across the state, the Appalachian Trail for a short period of about 80 miles through Georgia, the Ozark Highlands Trail in Arkansas, the Colorado Trail in my home state of Colorado, another one in the Cocopelli Trail, in Utah and Colorado, the Western States Trail, which is well known to the ultra running community from Lake Tahoe down to the Central Valley of California, and the Bay Area Ridge Trail in just north of San Francisco that kind of brought me to the finish of the run. So kind of a long explanation, but gives you an idea that I did think about a lot of different things when planning this route. I didn't plan out every single mile of it, but I did plan out a lot of the things that I knew was going to be important to me throughout. I didn't avoid cities. I specifically went through several cities, many of which that I'd never been to before, never been to Memphis or Tulsa or Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'd gone to Sacramento, but I hadn't actually seen much of it in California. Once I had all of those points laid out on the map, it was just kind of a connect the dots of getting from one ocean to the other.
Yeah. And one thing that struck me, Ricky, when I was watching the documentary was, you know, when I ran across Canada in 2018, I end up having a lot of quite similar experiences. And one of the things that ended up really kind of, you know, jumping out at me about the film was you said that a lot of these states, or most of these states, were more Republican states. And, you know, America is very much divided, you know, Democrat, Republican. And, you know, in Canada, where I live, Canada is very much divided as well, too, left and right. And a lot of the time, I, like you, don't really hang out with a lot of people that have different political views or vote differently than I do. And sometimes the very best thing to do is go and put yourself into an environment, in their environment, and you come to realize they're wonderful people. You know, maybe tell our audience a little bit more about that experience, about the people that you end up meeting, sometimes that have very different values even than yourself.
Yeah, so I guess in talking about that, I think it's important to say that I had planned this run regardless of the 2016 election. And I, for the most part, had planned out my route before the 2016 election. It was obviously a pretty heated election. On our side of the political spectrum, there was an immense amount of confidence, arrogance as well. And then when November 6th or November 8th, I'm now spacing the exact day, when that rolled around and so many of my friends and myself and my family were quite surprised and disappointed, I immediately looked at it as an opportunity for me to learn more about my country. I went straight back to the map and looked at how it's going to be going through that voted opposite to what I had voted. I've never been one person to really avoid, having interesting or heated conversations with people. It's not the first place that I go, but I do find it immensely beneficial to both empathy and understanding to have these conversations. Mm-hmm. And so I just saw it as a great learning experience that I was about to have. and really looked at it as a great opportunity. My route was, and it's nearly impossible to go across the country, Canada or the US or anywhere for that matter, without passing through an immense amount of rural landscapes. And that here in the States kind of translates as more right-wing agenda as opposed to a left-wing agenda. I just as an opportunity to get to know my fellow Americans a lot better.
Which is, yeah, that's a beautiful way to think about it. You know, that I do think, you know, with, I know you had traveled to quite a few countries. I've been to 45 countries throughout my travels. And I always come back and say, you know, the world's full of great people. You know, if you watch the news, you'll get sort of a little bit of a warped view of what's really happening. You see that 0.1%, not the rest of us who individually we might have different views, but in fact are really just fascinating and interesting, if nothing else. So it's a reward to all of us who decide to sort of stray a little bit farther than from our house to the grocery store and get out there. But what I'm always intrigued by is how once you start doing it, it's a little bit hard to turn back. And it seems like you continue to build on these experiences. So, you know, run across the US, you do the streets of San Francisco, streets of Santa Fe. I think this past weekend you were doing the Grand Traverse skiing up in Colorado, and you continue. So is there a bigger story other than you experiencing it? Do you have a message in your mind that you're trying to bring to the community to share with people?
I would say that I'm mostly driven by my own curiosity. Mm-hmm. And early on, as I mentioned, when I was 19 years old, I thought to travel, to go to a very far place, to a culture that is very, very different from your own culture. For me, back then, that was South America, hanging out in the Quechuan communities or Aymara communities, going down the Amazon in a boat, you know, mm-hmm. getting up to these high passes in the Andes, going to the Salade State, Bolivia. This kind of mindset of mine continued on for a long time, to the extent that I felt that I needed to go to Antarctica. I needed to go to the furthest away place on planet Earth. You know, it's about as far away as you can get before you actually launch off into space. And that's your next kind of destination in terms of remoteness. Mm. But it was in, you know, in my early 30s where I realized, you know, that it's a great way to experience the world and get to know yourself better. But it's not the only way to travel. And there's so much close by, both in nature and in culture, that if you just kind of allow yourself to be curious about it and focus on it, you can same thing, but it does require patience, and perhaps it even requires having to have had those experiences beforehand.
Yeah, and Ricky, yeah. I think it's pretty neat. You know, we get caught up in, and you look behind you there, and before the before we started recording the interview, these are all, you know, jars that are behind you full of dirt that you found in different parts of the world. And we get caught up in these really exotic, you know, going and experiencing a very different culture, a very different landscape. But then again, you know, you're so curious, not only from a faraway place and a faraway culture, but also, you know, the streets of San Francisco that you've never run. I mean, I live in Calgary, Canada, and there are portions of my city that I've never traveled to. Tell me a little bit more about the heat maps and the Strava kind of you know the mapping that you end up building with both Santa Fe, Mexico City, and San Francisco. You know, and really, what did you learn and experience about exploring your own cities?
Yeah, so I guess I would rewind a little bit to. So I finished my run across the country in 2017, 2018 rolled around, and already I was starting to get hungry for another adventure, maybe not 5 months going from ocean to ocean, but a sustained effort over a very dedicated period of time. And at that point, I was living with my then girlfriend, now wife, in San Francisco, and kind of reflecting back on my run across the country and kind of realizing that my run across the country was so primarily urban rather than rural, and to feel like I truly was understanding the country that I was living in. It seemed to me that I needed to focus on a more urban aspect of it. And I was literally right there living in what I would consider one of the greatest cities in the world, and claiming at least to myself that I knew it pretty well. And I wanted to put that to the test. Quick Google search told me that there was 1,157 miles of street in San Francisco, and my own brain, knowing long distances as you do, and you're able to do some quick calculations, I figured that was Denver to San Francisco, and I knew how far that was and how long that might take and what sort of effort that was. And I added miles for inherent inefficiency of doing something like that. And I set out to do it. I had a van, even though I was only living 30, 40 minutes away in Oakland, I had a van that I kind of became the base camp for the adventure, and set out running 50K a day to cover literally every single street in the entire 7x7 grid of San Francisco.
And so Ricky, did you end up going out at specific times of the day, early in the morning? Did you end up, you know, going out in the middle of the days in certain neighborhoods just because you wanted to meet certain people in different communities? I mean, I look at my city and, and Joe's in New York, and you have different boroughs, you have different cultures, different, you know, different types of people and different beliefs and different. You know, did you end up meeting a lot of people in San Francisco and Santa Fe and on and so forth that you were really quite happy that you had that experience?
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, when doing 50K a day and for something like every single street where you're dealing with inefficiencies and so much logistics, it was pretty much from 8 in the morning until 8 at night. Just moving and figuring out the map and stopping and printing out a new map and uploading my files and cross-referencing my files. So it was a full 12-hour day job during that time. So I didn't have much choice in terms of when I was going to be passing through certain neighborhoods. It just kind of was what it was. And then to answer your second question there about meeting people, without question, I met a bunch of people, so many people that I would have met before if I had not taken on a project with those sort of parameters before. One thing that I found initially to be a disappointment and a challenge was when I was running across the country, you know, I would arrive in a town with a backpack on and virtual stink lines coming off of my body, long beard, little running sticks, hiking poles. I could walk into a gas station and everybody stopped what they were doing and looked at me. Half of them came up to me and asked what I was doing. All of those resulted in wonderful conversations with everybody there. When you're doing the same thing in a massive city where people are already surrounded by sane people and crazy people and crazy people that look like sane people and sane people that look like crazy people. There's so much simulation going on that it's virtually impossible to pick up the same conversations on a daily basis. It's more, you have to kind of be a little bit more subtle about it and just kind of recognize that, you know, just a gesture, a look your way, whatever it is the interaction that you're having right then. And you can kind of follow through with it or just absorb it and appreciate it for what it was.
Yeah, you know, we haven't talked about this, but you remind me, so I have two daughters. And when my oldest daughter was 8 years old, we decided as a family that the four of us were going to visit all 50 states before she turned 18. And that we would make it sort of a family mission, because what did we know about the United States? We'd been to vacation places, but didn't really fully understand it. And what was fun about it was how distinctly different each was. So that was fun. And it was also rewarding to meet, sort of as Dave's question is, the people of each of the locations and who would befriend you, you know, just with a question, you know. I always liked asking people, not for a restaurant recommendation, but where do they go to eat? You know, and you find the local feeling, right? What does a local go to eat? And then we finished up, you know, it's interesting in the US, you know, Alaska and Hawaii were the last two. Of course, they're somewhat outliers in their own way. You know, wow, how are they part of the country? But you know, part of the reason I bring it up, just like what you decided to do and what any of us can, is Dave running across Canada, we can choose to go off and see and meet people and interact and explore, right? That's got to be part of sort of what we all stand for, which is that there's too many reasons to just sort of sit around and not do something. And I guess as we come out of this COVID era where we can get back on the road, it'll be fun to explore again and see different places. Do you feel like, you know, through what you've been doing, you're influencing people as well to sort of do their version of exploring?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You know, I had hoped that that my Every Single Street project would catch the attention of a few people out there. Certainly when I started it, I wasn't anticipating a global pandemic to keep everybody kind of locked in place for what's going on a year now. And, you know, this is, I guess it's about 2 or 3 years since I did that project. And I called it Every Single Street. Couple of reasons, because I did see like a specifically runner thing. I think that you can walk all of the streets in your town or neighborhood, or for a handicapped person, you can you know, take your wheelchair out and go experience these things. Or if you're more of a biker, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that's a great way to experience your neighborhoods. But the other reason I picked that name is because I looked at the hashtag and there was only three other photos associated with that specific hashtag on Instagram, Every Single Street. And so I'm like, okay, well, this will at least be a good way for me to organize my own personal project with just adding that hashtag onto every single photo. And 3 years later, I checked it out about a month ago, and there's over 10,000 photos with that hashtag. Nice. Associated with it, Every Single Street. And it's one of my favorite things to look at on the internet, is to see kind of how this project has grown its own legs and has really taken off here in the States, in Canada, Latin America. There's a woman doing all the streets in Dubai, all over Europe. It's become quite popular in the Netherlands. And then there's a couple places, and then even a couple places over in Asia. There's a gentleman that's kind of taken his own interpretation of it, and he's doing every single river in Tokyo, in Japan. And in a place like Tokyo, where the population is 30 million people, and it's there are a lot of rivers in town. So many of them have been put underground in order to make the infrastructure more efficient. And so he's going on this wild rabbit chase through the city, looking for rivers that people have, you know, sort of forgotten about. So yeah, it's just, I love to see how it's taken off, and how having something very, very similar, simple, such as the parameter that is entirely encapsulated in the three words of the title of it, every single street, people can really run with it.
That's no, great. Ricky, I love that. I think it's, I love your mission, and your mission, I think, is based off of curiosity and finding connection, both connection with your city and your country, and of course the world. Look behind you with all the, you know, the dirt that you've been, you know, walking on, you know, over top of, and you know, those are all, you know, experiences. It seems like you're a kind of guy who is, you know, instead of, you know, owning things, you want to own experiences, you want to have experiences, and on and so forth. You know, I've always been kind of curious when it comes to, you know, people like yourself, Ricky, who, you know, you have these experiences, but, you know, you almost can never have enough experiences. And try to promote other people having similar experiences with going out and creating connection. Is it mostly connection with other people? Is it mostly, you know, having opportunities for yourself to learn about different cultures and people outside of you? Or ultimately, do you think, Ricky, kind of what you're doing and your mission in life is to ultimately find yourself? Do you kind of go back there at times?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely driven by experiences and meeting other people. And this is usually a point in a conversation where I have to point out that my more of it, I would say over the past 5 or 6 years has been getting into meditation, because you're right about that, that it can seem that we can never have enough experiences. And I feel as though that can be just as much of a dangerous path to go down as never having enough money. Because you're never going to have enough money and you're never going to have enough experiences until you close your eyes and kind of look inside yourself and realize that you have everything that you need, you know, a beating heart and a brain that works are absolutely phenomenal things.
Absolutely.
A few years ago, I got into Vipassana meditation. This is becoming somewhat in vogue. Anyone that tells you they've just done a 10-day silent meditation is probably meditation that I have. It was just my first experience with it was one of the most incredible experiences I've had in my life. I've been down the Grand Canyon in a raft for 3 weeks, and I've sat still on a cushion with my eyes closed, concentrating on my breath for 10 days. And I would hold those two experiences in equal regard, and probably one of them I'll carry with me until my dying day, and that would be the meditation. So I guess that's a long-winded answer for saying that, you know, experiences are important.
Yeah, totally. And I've done silent retreats and silent meditations as well too, and you know, I think you're right, Ricky. You know, there's an opportunity at times to look outward and go and explore and go and understand different cultures, different people, different ideas, different vistas, different everything. But then there's also a time in one's life that you have to look inside, you know, where you could either, you know, be here and look out, or be here and look in. And I think that there's, you know, beautiful opportunity in both. In both self-discovery and finding oneself, but also finding, you know, external happiness and on and so forth. So let's talk more about your meditation practices and kind of, you know, you're now, you know, you finding that, okay, when I look inward, I'm actually, you know, finding a lot of peace and enjoyment in that. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, sometimes you look inward and you don't find that peace, which I think is super important. I think that a lot of people, especially when they're just starting off with meditation, You know, they think their meditation is going to be great for me because I'm already like that type of person. But then you close your eyes and try and concentrate on your breath, and you realize that you've got a thought coming up every 2 or 3 seconds, and it's actually quite a challenge. I found that one of the things with meditation is that it's really helped. I mean, certainly my personal life with my friends and my family, but also like physical body. The most thing that revealed to me with meditation is that, you know, 5 or 6 days into this, one of these 10-day retreats on the first one, I felt my shoulder on this side just drop down. It was only a half an inch, but it had occurred to me that I'd been holding this shoulder up for literally years. Mm. And it required all of the kind of concentrate my mind to actually allow all of those muscles to relax. And then this shoulder came down. And, you know, for all of these injuries that we can suffer as runners, so many of them, you know, you think you're going to get a massage or you're going to do some stretching and it's just going to get rid of that injury. But some of these are so ingrained in who we are that it actually requires quieting the thoughts in your brain to allow yourself to concentrate on the muscles in your body and to realize that this muscle is connected to this muscle, which is connected to this muscle, which is connected to this muscle. And it has to go in that order for one muscle to relax, in order for another muscle to relax, in order for your entire body to be relaxed and to kind of come back into line or into more of a homeostasis.
Yeah, it's interesting that. So I think, well, in our last few minutes, you know, there's this one, we've said, okay, there's experiences I can go out and do. That's awesome. We love that. They're all about that. Then there's this piece of discovering who we are. And then the third I would throw out there is the bringing people with us, mm-hmm. and using the sort of our own inspiration and capability as a mechanism for others to sort of start that discovery for themselves, you know. And it is it's the idea of somewhat of being selfless, you know. When you're, say, for example, a capable runner like you or Dave, you guys can run faster than other people, but to bring someone with you, you have to slow down, which you did a lot on your Transamerica. Ricky, in 17, I actually ran 6 marathons on 6 continents in 6 days, and mm-hmm. had in my head that I wanted to run sub-4 hours in all of them. And when I was in Johannesburg, I had a group of young people running with me, and we were getting sort of at mile 25, and I'm looking at my watch and looking at my watch, and I'm like, oh God, I'm not going to make it in 4 hours. And there's a young lady running with me, and she starts falling back. And it was just like, okay, but I came here to run, right? And I ran another like couple hundred yards, and I realized the 4 hours didn't matter. I didn't want her to finish behind. So I went back, I took a couple of people. So let's go back and run with her and bring her across the end of the run together, because that's really what it was about sharing that experience and bringing people along. And, you know, sort of ever since, I've always been in that, you know, that any capability I have should be shared for the benefit of others so they can learn, and then they could then do something similar, and then maybe we get an echo effect that's a good one for the world if we do more of that. Do you feel like as you know, not as we get older, because I don't like that language, but as we do this more and more, you're spending some more time helping others come along with you on the journey as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the most important part. And for me personally, I've found that genuine curiosity on my part is essential in bringing people along on the journey. I can't fake that. I see other people. I can see it immediately, and it's not as rich. So I, over the past few years, for one trip, I'm going on 8 years, and then for other trips, I'm going on several. But I put together running trips for the community. The first one that I came up with was Hut Run Hut, and this is in my hometown of Aspen, connecting up five different huts over 6 days, doing 15 to 20 miles a day, with an emphasis of fun over fast. And it's really like anyone that's like, tell me about this race. And I'm like, all right, it is not a race. We are out there. We're enjoying each other's company. We're just migrating from one place to the next. That's what's most important. Yep. And then I enjoy it so much. It's an opportunity for me, and for other people, that I've put together a bunch more trips. And so that's kind of one of the ways that I'm doing it right now, on a one-on-one or face-to-face experience. And then just kind of seeing how that's taking off in a broader context as well.
You did a bus trip too, didn't you, with a bunch of people?
Yeah, so I did one that was kind of the stepbrother or stepsister of that Hut Run Hut trip. I called it Bus Run Bus. Yep. And that came about because I was living in San Francisco and I learned about this this bus company called Green Tortoise, which has been around since the 1970s, and they take normal coach buses and convert the insides of them to be able to comfortably sleep. Well, I should put that comfortable in quotes, quotation marks, but you can at the very sleep people. And I hired two drivers and gave them a map of what I was hoping to do in 7 days. And they were super fired up about it. So we went from San Francisco to Yosemite to Zion National Park to the Grand Canyon to Las Vegas to the Central Valley for an Inburger, of course, and then to the bigger coast of San Francisco, running in each of those places along the way. It was just a phenomenal experience. I just loved it. We have this group text thread that was 2 years ago, and this group text thread is still going on to this day. All of us just kind of checking in on each other, sharing some funny news, or whatever it might be.
That was great. Very nice. You know, so maybe as we sort of wrap up a little bit, you know, it's hard with all that you've done to probably do this too succinctly, but, you know, what is your chasing tomorrow? You know, what's next for Ricky Gates, and what can we come to expect happening over the next few years?
I'm now living in Santa Fe, New Mexico. As you've mentioned, I'm working on the Every Single Street project here. I haven't completed it. It's actually kind of nice to be able to take my time on this project. In San Francisco, I did 1,300 miles in about 45 days. And it was fulfilling, but it was also a place that I had lived for 6 years and had gotten a sense of. Here in Santa Fe, to do the same project with a similar sort of mindset, which is to say somewhat fast and furious, would do this new home of mine in injustice, just because since it's all foreign to me, you know, I feel the need to kind of slow it down. So I'm going on, I think 15 halfway done east of the city and learning a little bit more, every time I go out there. And then I've got a couple more running trips that I'm putting together. This bus run bus idea seemed to have taken off, and I'm putting one together up in Alaska this coming summer. And then in Mexico in November, I'm going to be joining up with a group there called Aire Libre, who puts together amazing running trips. And we're going to start in Mexico City and go to some of the mountains just north of there, and then back to the volcanoes around Mexico City, and then hit the coast, and then go to Oaxaca, finish the trip there in Oaxaca. And then kind of the final project that I'm working on, which is again, one that I've thought about for a lot of years, and I've been working on bits and pieces over the past couple of years, I'm calling the 50 Classic Trails of North America. Mm. And this is loosely based on a book written in the 1970s called The 50 Classic Climbs of North America. And mm-hmm. just kind of, you know, the opinion of a couple climbers back then. And likewise, this is certainly up for debate, but my opinion of what are the 50 classic trails.
Wow, that sounds fun.
Here in North America. Yeah, it's super exciting. The parameters are that the trail needs to be able to be completed in 24 hours to kind of put it within that ultra runner realm, mm-hmm. and rather than a fast packing realm. That the trail, I can confidently tell somebody in New York City that they get on an airplane and go out there and do that, and it's worth your airplane ticket and the effort that you've put into it. And that the lot of the 50 classic trails kind of paints something of a complete picture of what this continent is all about. So it's going to be desert, it's going to be mountain, it's going to be coast. So it's really fun for me planning it. It's a great way for me to reach out to different members of the community throughout the continent and to form these relationships and kind of get people's opinion about what they think is really special to offer about their landscape there.
That's well, Ricky, great. This has been fantastic. You know, I love the fact that you have, you know, gone out and had all these experiences, but more, even more so right now, you're harvesting experiences for others. You're taking your love and your wisdom as well too. And creating these opportunities for friends and strangers and new friends, you know, moving forward. So I want to thank you very much for your time today and joining us on the Chasing Tomorrow podcast.
Thank you guys so much for having me along for the show. Always a pleasure to chat with like-minded people. If anyone's interested in any of these projects, I've got them up on my website, rickygates.com. I have a dedicated website for the Every Single Street project, everysinglestreet.com. And you can also find out about my running trips on my website. I always love people and get one next.
All right. Well, we'll make sure to add all that to the show notes, and mm-hmm. we'll look forward to getting out there maybe one day running with you, Ricky. Thanks very much.
Sounds great, gentlemen. You have a wonderful day.
See ya.
Thanks, Ricky.
Well, Dave, that was a fun conversation. Ricky is such a cool dude. And following his life journey is inspiring for sure. I think it's also interesting to see how he's shifting to support and encourage people and taking on challenges for themselves. You know, he's turning his running into sort of a public service kind of thing. I also felt that his comment on needing to balance experiences with an internal centeredness is a good one to think about. So having guys like Ricky on the podcast, amazing for both of us, that's for sure. Well, there you have it. That's a wrap for this week. As always, a big shout out to our sponsor, Performance Tea. You can find them on www.performancetea.com. And they've given us a discount code for any of our listeners to get 20% off their purchase. Just use Chasing20 at checkout. And we would greatly appreciate it if you could follow us on Instagram and give us a review on Apple Podcasts. That would be awesome. Always a huge thanks to our listeners for coming with us on this journey and chasing tomorrow with us. Thanks.